Hey, glad you can make it. And welcome to the Employee Cycle Podcast, where we talk to HR innovators, thought leaders, and even some disruptors about the latest in HR trends, HR tech, and you guessed it, HR data. Well, you've heard enough of me talking. Now let's start the show. Show.
Hello. Welcome back to the Employee Cycle HR Podcast. I am so excited. This is actually the first podcast that we are recording in 2019. Woo, 2019. Can't believe it. But we are really kicking it off with an awesome guest. So just to remind you, I'm Bruce Marable, CEO and co-founder of Employee Cycle. We're an HR analytics dashboard. You want to bring all your HR data from a bunch of different places. We're the company for you to be able to view, track, and analyze all that data in one place. But enough about me. Let's talk about our amazing guest. So, she is the founder of A Modern Way to Work. She is in Toronto, which is one of my favorite cities. Shout out to the six. Please welcome to the podcast, Amanda Hudson. Woo!
Thanks, Bruce. Hi.
Thank you. So, Amanda, as we were talking about the topic that really gets you super passionate and energized, we were talking about how HR can help build good people managers. So that's what we're going to be talking about today, just for you audience members out there to know why you should be listening. But in order to really kick this off, Amanda, we need to know, how did you end up in the wonderful world of HR?
All right. Thanks for having me, firstly, and thanks for a shout out to Toronto. Am I your first Canadian?
You are.
Yes. Nice. I will try to represent the whole country so well. How did I get into HR? I think it started in grade 10, and I won't tell you the whole history, but I took my first introduction to business class, and I was just like, this is it. This is what I want to dedicate my life to doing. And then went to college and did a business degree, and I thought I was going to go into international business because, you know, you're, I don't know what, 18 at the time. And that seemed to be like the sexiest of the majors. And I took my first HR class with an amazing woman named Carol Ann, who's a good friend and mentor of mine. And I remember thinking, oh, this, you know, from all my work experience and what I've seen where businesses struggle, this is for me. This is how I think I can best help businesses succeed. And the rest is sort of history.
Nice. You are probably the youngest HR person to have ever worked in HR in what, the third grade, fifth grade? Is that when you started in HR?
No, but I was just saying like 10th grade. I took like my first business class and I was like, I was hooked. I was like, this is it.
Right. You were in class. Like, whoa, this class, before you start this class, we're going to onboard you. Properly.
Right? Yeah, exactly.
Got it. So as we mentioned, today we're going to talk about how HR can help build good people managers. So let's first break that sentence down and really describe and define what is a people manager.
Yeah. And I think even like prior to that, like why it's that connection is so important, I think is really critical to make. So I define, you know, people managers, anyone leading a team, anybody who has a group of people reporting into them. I have no like real formal definition of it. I think why HR needs to care so much about those people is at the end of the day, we build these amazing programs and processes and all of these things to support employee engagement and culture. And they either live or die by the success or talents of the people managers that the employees are dealing with every single day. So I think it's just such a crucial pairing and connection.
Great. So now that we know what a people manager is, what does a good people manager look like?
Oh, good question. I obviously could go on and I could probably spend a whole hour talking about that. But I think some of the key things that we've learned and we train people in our programs, really great people managers have a high sense of self-awareness. I think that really is number one. We've all worked with people who are self-aware and we've worked with people who are not self-aware. And I think most people would agree that the more self-aware a manager is, the better they are to work for. And I think in this day and age, really good managers recognize that they might be managing teams and people whose jobs they don't know how to do. And that's definitely like a big shift. Like historically, if you rose the ranks in a company, you would learn how to do everything, you know, in your role, and then you'd get, you know, promoted to being the manager of that group. But in this day and age, people are managing teams and resources, people they may not have ever met in person. And so I think really good people managers these days recognize that their job is really to gather info from the people working for them and help those people as a team make decisions that are best aligned for the company.
So how about we break this podcast up into three different sections? First, we'll talk about what's wrong with people management today. Then we'll go into how HR can help build great people managers. And then we'll close it out with understanding how do you track and measure the ROI of good people managers? And how do you track if you have good people managers in the first place? How does that sound?
Sounds perfect.
All right. So what's wrong with people management today? What are the biggest problems? What are the biggest issues that you're seeing?
I think it really starts with how people get promoted into people management. And so historically, you know, what we see is I'm the best at X job. So I'm the best software developer, or I'm the best nurse, or I'm the best teacher, or I'm the best HR person or recruiter. And I'm a really, really strong individual contributor. And as a result, the company looks at me and says, you know, you're the top salesperson. So it naturally makes sense to make you the manager of all salespeople. And I think the biggest problem that we get into is most people don't realize that all of the tools that made them an amazing individual contributor will actually make them a horrible people manager. And so I always joke, like, the day you become a manager of other people, it was likely because you were an amazing individual contributor. And someone kind of needs to grab your hand and say, okay, for all the reasons you are successful, you need to stop doing all those behaviors and now align yourself to a whole new set of behaviors and values. And I think, A, most people don't get told that. And most companies don't select people managers for management talent. They select them because they have great individual contributor talent. And those two things are really different.
That's interesting. I can't remember how many years ago it was, but I was reading some Harvard Business Review article, and they were talking about this study, this case study that they had, this big engineering firm. And there were a bunch of engineers that worked at this firm. All of the engineers had 10 years experience, 20 years experience, 30 years experience. But this engineer with 4 years experience ended up becoming the manager. And all the engineers were pissed. Mm-hmm. But they went through and looked at all the individual qualities and realized and had to show the rest of the more tenured and seasoned engineers that although your depth of knowledge and your industry and domain expertise is really deep, you don't really have the personable and social and EQ skills and all the communication skills that you need in order to be an effective manager. So how do you deal with that internally when people are looking and saying, why is this person a manager? They don't even know a fraction, a sprinkle of what I know. And how do you communicate that that's not really why you should be a manager just because you have a lot of domain expertise?
Right. I think that's a really perfect example. So thanks for sharing that. I think it really starts with companies communicating to staff what they value. And I think, you know, part of the problem is that most companies don't provide a track or a growth path for people that doesn't lead into managing other people. And we're seeing it more in companies now where they mostly tech companies, where they'll have a technical track for people who never want to manage teams or lead other people. And then they'll have like a people management and leadership track. The first thing is companies really need to start communicating to staff. You can be a phenomenal individual contributor and we will reward you for that. And that's great. That doesn't necessarily, those skills aren't how we're going to select our people managers. Your ability to, you know, get buy-in from others, lead a team, listen, help a team make a decision, facilitate that decision-making, solve conflict within a team, you know, those are the things we're looking for before we actually make you a people manager.
I want to go back to that point you just made about the two different tracks, the people management track versus the all-star individual contributor. I don't know if I've even given that much thought to how you can create this amazing and compelling career trajectory without being a manager.
Right. And I think that's part of the problem.
Does that work for all roles? Or is that only specific roles where you can continue to create more value and get paid more and have more say and more influence, but not manage people? How do you have both of those things at the same time?
Yeah, and I think that's such a great question, and really dependent on the size of the organization too, because I think that a lot of companies, especially if they're bigger, rely solely on like moving up ranks or moving up a level or getting a new job title to keep people engaged and motivated and feel like they're growing. And I think that that's a bit of, you know, a lazy way of engaging people into feeling growth versus, you know, you could have one person who has technically the same job title for 10 years, but a really great manager will evolve their role and see ways to grow them into new projects, into new pathways without needing that title. So, you know, I think most companies don't present ways for people to feel like they're growing and evolving, which we know is a really important factor for employee engagement, without, you know, the management title.
And I'm going to pick on us millennials for a bit, even though I'm at the very, very top of the millennials. I don't even know if I identify, but people say that I should, so I do. But either way, I was at some conference not too long ago, and there was someone saying that they've realized, and this was a Fortune 500 company, that a lot of younger people, mostly millennials, don't want to be people managers because they just look at it as too much work. Now, I'm sure this is not all, so I'm not trying to stereotype an entire generation, but it does seem like a lot of people are now saying, I don't really know if I want to manage people. That means that I need to work after 5 o'clock and I need to be responsible for other people. So how do you even make people management look and feel and become exciting enough for enough people to even want to go into it where they want to manage people?
Right. But I feel like I have so many mixed feelings about the whole millennial discussion. And like, I've, you know, I've been asked to speak on the topic. And it's like, I refuse. Cause I think we quote unquote millennials make up like over 60% or something of the workforce today. So really you're just talking about the majority of the workforce. But what I will say is, I think if I can speak to being a millennial, what I'm experiencing, and I know a lot of the colleagues that I have and people I know, is for me and for those people, the status of a title or the status of being a manager doesn't really matter. Like, I think there's a movement away in our generation from like the importance of status of title. And what I mean, when I went to school, and likely you, it was like there's more and more a push for like team projects, teamwork, and those team leaders would switch up all the time. And so you were constantly redefining your role. And I think in workplaces today, the way teams are tackling problems and the rate at which problems are coming at teams, to think that there would be like one person in charge, like the boss, is a bit foolish. It's like we all have all these little components of knowledge, and it's sometimes my components of knowledge are going to be more important, but I also can recognize that sometimes, you know, you might have areas of knowledge that we need more to solve this problem. And so I don't know that it's that people management, probably the person that you heard say, it was like millennials are lazy and they don't want to stay after five and manage other people because it's extra work. But what I actually think it is just people realizing that that role of like leading a group through a decision is going to constantly be rotating, and less connection to like the status of a title. But that's some big assumptions on my end.
Got it. And while we're still talking about problems with people management today, what about a lot of the real people issues? So harassment and discrimination and bias and all of the other issues that are not so much organizational domain expertise problems, but very people problems, whether it's inside the workforce or outside. Where do you think we are with that in regards to having a healthy culture of people management in general?
Yeah, I feel like that's a complex question. I think when it comes, you know, what's interesting is I think often as HR people, we have it a bit backwards. We think that we can build great culture through systems and processes and policies. And I actually think like great culture is built through the day-to-day interactions of people managers with employees. I actually think the, you know, the few things that you listed, harassment, bias, discrimination, those are the things that actually happen at a much more systemic level in organizations that HR people, if they, you know, do the right research and learn about where those things are happening from a systems perspective, can eradicate a lot of that to the extent that it, the, like, you know, to have one individual manager with like a deep bias or discrimination is actually much more rare than those few things happening at a systemic level.
Got it. So we've just listed some of the potential problems that you can have with people managers, whether it's on the people side, or more often than not, they just don't have the skills or the training to be able to manage people because you just move this person up because they were crushing it or killing it or whatever you want to call it as an individual contributor. So you just picked whoever had the best results based off of whatever metrics you were using. But now that we go into how HR can help people become better and great people managers, where does HR start? How do you even identify where the areas where we need to fix first?
Yep. So I think the first step, which we kind of alluded to earlier, is what is your selection process for making someone a quote unquote team lead or making them a people manager? I don't think most companies are actually having that conversation. I think oftentimes, you know, even when we're recruiting, let's say a VP of sales for somewhere, we aren't necessarily, you know, even doing reference checks, like give me the names of five people you managed and let me speak to them. And that's like if you're looking externally for someone to manage people, but even internally, companies aren't looking at and measuring the skills that it would actually take for someone to be a great people manager. So I think that's number one. How are you, what is your selection criteria for putting someone in a team lead or people management place? And then once people are there, because oftentimes as HR people, we will inherit people managers. We don't ever get to go into a company from scratch and design the perfect company. And so I think then it's about, you know, this is really where the metrics come in, Bruce, and I think it's super important. You know, it's not about people management for the sake of people management. It's about good people management and good HR for the sake of achieving your business outcome. And so, you know, I would say like, what are the KPIs that are really important to this business? Is it sales? Is it client acquisition? If we're a nonprofit, is it, you know, some sort of thing we're trying to eradicate in the world and how are we doing that? And which teams are working, you know, closest or having the best sort of KPIs. And I would usually use that to identify, likely there's a direct correlation of that, the people manager of that team and the teams that are having like the most successful outcome. And then I would likely go look at the teams that are having the least successful outcomes and, you know, start really assessing, you know, where that those people managers need potentially training. And I know, I'm sure you hear this all the time, like training just gets like thrown around as like the solution to everything. So I would say that, you know, there are some people who naturally are great people managers, but most people aren't. Most people really struggle and need some development.
So if you're telling HR leaders to work with the different people managers and figure out what are the business outcomes that each of those business managers or people managers should be responsible for, then I'm sure there are some HR leaders out there with the question of how much does an HR person need to understand every aspect of the business to be able to do that effectively? Are those KPIs coming from the top or the boss of the people manager that you're trying to help or you work with? Are the metrics coming from the actual people manager? Do you have to know enough about that business to even already know the metrics to be able to understand how this person can become better to achieve those goals? What does that look like?
Yeah, I'm pretty biased. And I will say that if, you know, as an HR manager, you or HR person, you probably need to know more about all aspects of the business than, you know, most middle managers now. And you can't effectively partner with a manager or a team or a business unit if you don't understand what they do. And, you know, like one of our clients right now is like a gaming media company, and we're working really closely with the director of content. And I'm having to learn as much about, you know, content and media and gaming as, you know, it's not HR knowledge in itself without that business context is sort of useless. And so as an HR person thinking about developing the skills or building the skills or making recommendations to these managers, you need to form such a deep level of trust with them. So I think so many times in HR, we look at what managers are doing and we roll our eyes and we get frustrated and we're like, we told them to do this. Why didn't they do this? And I think the more those people trust you and trust that you understand their business and their day-to-day challenges, the more open they're going to be to that continual conversation about, you know, whatever recommendations you have to grow them as a people manager.
So this is very interesting, and I'm glad that you gave an opinionated answer, because we don't just go in the middle of the road like, oh, well, maybe you do it this way or maybe you do it that way. So we're going to take that path of that HR should understand the business. As an aside, how much of the business does this HR person need to understand on top of doing all the work that they do? And especially so in our target audience, we're typically talking to companies, small to medium enterprises under 1,000 employees, and there might be a team of 3, maybe 20, but probably 3 to 5 HR people in that employee size. They have so much to do, almost damn near sleeping in the office. And now this person needs to understand every single aspect of the business. How do they go about doing that for some of the people who just can't even imagine learning all of the aspects of the business, especially for roles, like you were saying, that they don't even know what they do, which is why a lot of companies will hire outsourced recruiting firms to hire technical talent or to hire very hard to find people in data science or other very hard to find and fill roles, because the company doesn't even know how to hire them with their own recruiter, so they hire externally. So now this HR person is just studying up on every single department. What does that look like?
Yeah, so much in there. So I won't take a middle of the road answer. I think that if you aren't continuously learning about the business, like, what are you doing? And like that would be my first statement. And I think I'm really fortunate to have had an incredible first boss in HR who was like, we are never going to plan a party. Like, we are never going to plan a social event. That's not what we do. That's not how you deliver great HR. You need to add value to the business every single day. And I think the only way to add value to the business every single day is understand what it's doing and what people are doing. And so my first role was in HR at an aviation maintenance management software company, which is a mouthful. And I think I learned more there about aviation maintenance than one would ever want to know, and software development and tech and startups than I did about quote unquote HR. Because, you know, HR in itself has so many different applications, but you need to know how to drive value for your business. So to me, I don't buy it. Like, oh, I'm, you know, so busy doing all these things. How do I have time to, you know, learn about the business? How can you afford not to? And like, what are you doing with all your time if you don't know the business? Probably a lot of the things that make, you know, everybody hate HR.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. And just to dig into this a little bit more, how does an HR person show a business manager that they understand the business? What does that look like?
Oh, a great question. I think, you know, admit you don't know sometimes, you know, just start showing up. So I think, you know, there's this business partner model for HR people, and it depends on the size of your company. And I think a lot of HR people spend a lot of their time doing very administrative things. And with technology and dashboards like yours and, you know, so many pieces that people have worked really hard to eradicate the admin side of HR. And so I think that excuse sort of lessens, is that excuse that we're sort of insanely busy all day. And I think a big part of it is, you know, start showing up at these managers meet, like ask them, obviously, managers meetings, sit down with them, you know, spend time, like, you know, if you're working in a gaming media company and you don't know anything about gaming, like we bought a few books about gaming. We like showed up at their conference. I asked a 10-year-old to teach me how to play Fortnite. It's just like a general curiosity about, you know, for us, our clients. I'm picking on them in the sense, because that, like, you know, when we work with a beauty brand, that's like very easy for me to get. You know, this is a bit harder. And I ask a million questions. And, you know, I think for HR people, like, don't be afraid to look dumb and not know. Pick up the books, read about it, you know, dig into whatever industry you're in, speak to experts, show up at the meetings. I think that is like one of the best ways to start absorbing the info.
I like that. And the last question before we start talking about how do you track the progress or the ROI of helping these managers become better is to really dig into training. So we did a podcast before where I was interviewing a woman about micro learning. And one of the questions that I had was, how do you decide whether or not you should help a manager learn what most people call soft skills, but she calls life skills? How do you focus on whether or not somebody needs, or human skills, I'm sorry. So do you focus on the human skills, which are AKA soft skills? Do you focus on training on the domain expertise of the industry for this people manager, or do you focus on the role and department of the people manager? So let's just say if it's marketing, should this person be learning more about marketing to become a better people manager? Is it more about the human soft skills, or is it more about the industry that they're in to really help their team become better and them become a better leader? Or is it a combination of all three?
I think it's multifaceted. I can speak a bit to, so, you know, 5 or 6 years, no longer than that, almost a decade ago, I was traveling across the country and speaking at conferences about bettering HR practices for a role I had. And at the end of every talk, people would come up to me with their quote unquote unique HR challenges. And what I was finding was that there were like common threads when you would root back through these issues that all seemed really different on the surface. There were like core threads that, you know, people were really struggling with. And if they had had those skills initially, they probably wouldn't have these massive issues. So they didn't know how to have difficult conversations. They didn't know how to hold people accountable. They didn't know how to get into a situation when someone was struggling and help that person move past a roadblock. And we actually built a management and leadership program, which we offer globally and monthly online now, to managers literally across the world and in every industry. So like last month, we had someone doing it from Japan. We've had like a woman from Lebanon who runs a nonprofit. And I'm using this example because what happens when those people get into our virtual room for our group sessions and management training, they're realizing that the human aspect is the same regardless of industry. So, you know, a really successful CEO here in Canada who runs this massive beauty franchise actually was the most similar to a woman running this like small nonprofit in like the outskirts of Ontario. And their challenges around their teams were virtually identical. So to me, that says it's the human skills or the life skills. I like both those things so much better than soft skills that people really need. Because at the end of the day, I always say like humans are really complicated. And as long as you're working with humans, it doesn't matter the industry. Really great people management and leadership is really industry agnostic.
Nice. So we've already went through and discussed a lot of the problems that are plaguing people managers today. We talked about how HR can really help people managers become better at their work and managing teams. So how do you track if that's working and how do you measure the ROI? Because if you're going to, whether it's hire outside consultants like your firm or buy software or do anything that has a budget tied to it, you're going to have to show the ROI. And maybe it's not a budget tied to it, it's just time. I'm assuming you still need to show the ROI of you spending your time on this. So what does that look like?
Mm-hmm. So I think, you know, a lot of, you know, what your dashboards are collecting are just like really great data as metrics of how people managers are doing. So what's the turnover in those departments? I'm a really big Gallup employee engagement advocate. So for me, if you follow employee engagement versus satisfaction and measurement, and you look at the firms who've, you know, done the research and science, they show that engagement is really driven by your direct people manager and that that person has the biggest influence over how you feel every day. So I think many companies have some form of measurement over engagement. So to me, I would ask them, you know, are you able to tie those engagement metrics back to an individual manager and to a group? If not, then you're probably, you know, they're not the right metrics, but you know, that's really key. And then, you know, after that, okay, great. Like, let's look at turnover. Let's look at, you know, time to fill a role. You know, let's look at the diversity of the team. Let's look at their actual business KPIs. So if they're a sales team, are they hitting their targets? They're a customer service team. Are they, you know, hitting their targets? So I think you can use metrics in such a multifaceted way to measure the success of a people manager. If they're doing their job really well, all of those, you know, metrics are going to increase.
It's interesting that you were saying, is the sales team hitting their numbers? When I think of companies, especially individual people managers, I think about sports a lot. And that analogy is always being made. And so when you take something like a football team, and you might have, you know, an offensive coordinator or a defensive coordinator, you have all these different coaches for different parts of the team. And sometimes you get rid of the players, sometimes you get rid of the coach. So how do you determine whether or not, and sometimes you get rid of both. So how do you determine whether or not it's an employee problem versus a people manager problem? And I'm sure that becomes very gray. How do you navigate through that?
I always say, and when we go in and work with clients, they will often blame employees. Like, that's usually the lens we come in from. You know, we have an accountability issue. Our employees are bad because of XYZ. And we have a philosophy that if you are leading a team, you are 100% responsible for whatever that team is producing or not producing. So we actually say, okay, great. Yeah, okay, your team's doing all these, you know, potentially bad things. Let's assume it's 100% your fault and work there for a while. And that doesn't always make us popular, but it is really effective. And so I think what companies, you know, need to start doing, or what HR people need to start doing, is helping, you know, managers and leaders of teams take that lens. Okay, it's really easy to blame so-and-so for poor performance. As a manager, of course, it's the easiest thing to do. It's not my fault. But how am I contributing that to that problem? Did I set up the right expectations? You know, what can I do to fix it? I can give a really personal example. I was the chair of the School of Business at a large college here in Canada and managed a bunch of unionized faculty, all of whom had been there long before I joined. And as you would imagine, with unionized faculty, you have like the vast majority are phenomenal and you have some poor performers. And when bad things would happen, I could have easily been like, oh yeah, it's just Stuart again being himself. Or I could say, well, I'm now the manager of that person. If I'm 100% responsible for their engagement and their performance in the classroom, what can I do differently? And so you know, the sports analogy, it's hard for me to speak directly to the sports analogy because I'm not a huge sports fan, but go Raptors. I would say that there's obviously a level of difference, but, you know, the vast majority of people performance issues in organizations, I can tie back to the manager. And then when they change how they're operating, it usually changes the performance issue.
That was awesome. You dropped a lot of gems there. And I hope everyone appreciated that. But now we're going to go to my favorite part of the podcast, which I like to call the real, the random, and the ridiculous. So are you ready?
I'm ready.
All right. So the real question, do you like bread pudding? And if so, how do you like it made?
I'm just going to keep it simple and say, no, I don't like bread pudding.
Oh, and I thought you were one of my favorite people being from Toronto.
I don't even know what bread pudding is.
Oh, gosh. I don't know if this is a Canadian thing. I don't like bread pudding, or I don't even know if it's an Amanda thing. But either way, we're going to have to fix that.
You'll have to figure it out.
We'll have to fix that very soon. All right. That's always a sign for me to know whether or not I can actually hang out with a podcast guest. So we'll fix that. We'll fix that. Okay. The random question. HR in Canada versus HR in the States. Mm. What do you think is the biggest difference?
Legislation. I know that's like the least sexy answer on earth. Our legislation probably is the biggest difference. And I could go into that. You know, a simple example, you know, diversity and discrimination, how those things are tackled in the US versus Canada, massive pieces of legislation. I think you and I were discussing this one day about pay equity.
Yep.
So we actually have, in Ontario anyway, and in many provinces, pay equity legislation. That's something that I don't think most states have. So legislation, I would say, is the biggest difference.
All right. And then the ridiculous question. What are some of the worst excuses you've ever heard of why companies have bad people management?
Oh, I think, oh, that's a good one. A lot of it is just, you know, we didn't have time, or, you know, we didn't really, when I hear that, I just think like they didn't make it a priority.
Yep.
And so I don't even know what they're saying to me, because it's filtering through my head is we just didn't make it a priority. And I think that's the number one thing that companies do, is they just don't think of it as a priority. And like most things that aren't urgent, when you ignore them, they eventually become urgent priorities.
Nice. So to sum this up, some great person somewhere at some time in our history said that people don't leave companies, they leave bad managers. So I think that really sums up everything that we talked about today. Amanda, this was an amazing podcast. Woo! Thanks for being here.
Thanks, Bruce. I'm like going to literally Google bread pudding and go figure. And I'm like either going to be made fun of that for the rest of my career, or like you and I are going to have some bread pudding one day somewhere in the world. It'll be our first meal together.
And now I'm going to have to pick the best place. I think I'm going to have to Google if I can find a place in Toronto with bread pudding. Maybe it's
the best bread pudding.
Best in bread pudding in Toronto. That'll be my first Yelp search in Toronto. So, where can people find you in a modern way to work online?
Yeah, so they can find us at amodernwaytowork.com. And on there, they'll find some micro courses and digital resources that we have to help better people management in organizations, and also our monthly management and leadership intensive, which they can do from literally anywhere in the world.
Great. And we'll put all that info in the show notes. So all you HR leaders out there, thank you so much for being a loyal fan and listener to the podcast. We hope you liked it. I know I did, and I'm pretty sure you did as well. Also, if you did like this episode, please give us a 5-star rating on iTunes, because that shows that you care and you know you're not really bothered by my voice, which is great. And lastly, if you have not downloaded the podcast to your favorite podcast player, Spotify or whatever podcast you're playing that you have on your iPhone or Android, please download the podcast. We need you here. our mission is to help you become smarter, more data-driven, stay on top of everything in HR. And look, HR, I say this every time, but I really mean it. Please continue to hire, train, and retain the best workforce possible. Thanks. Later, kids.